3,000 wells already drilled, with plans for up to 60,000 more. Farmers needing the cash, pitted against others wanting the environmental protection. Regulatory agencies hopelessly under-resourced, forced to rely too much on industry self-regulation, and David and Goliath legal battles playing out in the courts. In 4 short years, that's the legacy of the opening up of the Marcellus Shale Formation in eastern America, looking for shale gas development. Underlying West Virginia, eastern Ohio, Pennsylvania, and into New York, the Marcellus Shale contains one of the world's largest supplies of natural gas. Tom Wilbur is a journalist who spent years speaking to the key players and local residents for his book Under the Surface. He tells our environment editor Greg Borschmann it all started as an economic boomtime story.
In the summer of 2008, a company by the name of XTO negotiated a deal with a coalition of farmers for $110 million to open up 50,000 acres of pristine farmland never before developed by any gas company or mineral extraction company. And this caught everybody's attention. That type of money in a rural community around here, some of these farmers were making more in a day than they made in a lifetime. So we knew something was afoot, and government people and farmers and emergency responders all started asking, what is this shale gas? With this type of money behind it, what's going to happen to our communities? What's it going to look like?
And there are always winners and losers. There have been in this story. How much has this reinforced old divides in America, especially between city and country? Because this boom has divided America, hasn't it?
Yes, it's very polarizing, and it's divided across a couple lines. The one obvious line is landowners versus non-landowners here, because a lot of the farmers in upstate New York and northeastern Pennsylvania are second or third or fourth generation farmers, and the golden years of farming and the heyday of farming is past. So they are land rich and cash poor. They're struggling to pay taxes on the land, and they can't farm it profitably very much anymore. There's some dairy farms around here that are profitable, but they're usually pretty big enterprises. So the small family farm is pretty much gone away. So you have that divide. You also have the political divide, which tends to be classical in our country, Republican versus Democrat, conservative versus liberal, and the ideology of I should be able to do whatever I want with my land, this is my land, versus you have somebody that says, well, you know, I really have a right to be protected against the hazards of somebody else acting carelessly.
Walter Hang is a professional environmental advocate in the US. Hang has forensically attacked the industry's claim that it's well-regulated and problem-free. He says the debate over gas is complex, but ultimately simple. Some people want the environmental protection, and some people simply want the money. Is that the core of the problem?
On the polar extremes of this argument, that's what you're hearing. But like any issue, there's a lot of places in between a large part of the voting block that probably are sitting on the sidelines now waiting to see how this is panning out. And we have national election year coming up here in 2012, in November of this year. And the federal government's take on shale gas development, President Obama's in particular, has been pretty industry-friendly, and it's going to remain to be seen whether the public elects a Congress that will also support the industry.
Well, let's go to government. You point to the challenges, the regulatory morass that shale gas has created for US regulators, agencies already under-resourced, reporting that's archaic and incomplete. Have those problems been fixed?
No, they haven't. The state governments are understaffed. And again, they rely heavily on the industry to self-report problems. So they don't have the inspectors, and they've said this in public hearings in Pennsylvania. The state regulators have said, we need a tax on the industry to bring in a revenue source so we can hire more regulators and get out to these sites and see what's going on firsthand rather than just relying on industry reports. And this is when the industry first started. Right now, they're still in the infancy of developing the Marcellus Shale. They're 4 years into it. If it gets fully developed, it'll be 20 or 30 years. They've drilled 3,000 wells now. Fully developed play would have about 50 or 60,000 wells in it.
Your story very much zeroes in on a group of people who were At the beginning of that boom in the Marcellus, they lived in the Appalachian Mountains around the town of Dimmock in northeast Pennsylvania. A disparate group of old and new rural America, initially very grateful for the interest shown by the land agents for the shale gas companies. But things went terribly wrong, mainly with their water. How much were those people simply the victims of those early days of the boom? Can industry argue it's since cleaned up its act?
Well, the industry does certainly argue that, and it points to all the successes. My book does focus on the problem areas, and one reason is I think that you have a story like with Ken Ely, who is the quarry worker and originally had anticipated that this would be a good thing. There's this sense of disillusionment when it didn't work out for them, and they expected revenues, they expected a better quality of life, and instead they got bad water. I think that those stories have to be told. There are instances where things work out okay and drilling is done without incident, and the industry will showcase those areas.
How much is this story now only able to play out in the courts? I mean, America is a famously litigious society. Is this what's already happening in New York, in Pennsylvania?
Yeah, the courts are going to be a huge factor in determining the outcome of shale gas development here in the country. And it's somewhat of a mismatch, a David Goliath story, when you have a landowner with a heavy burden of proof taking on a gas company who's very well equipped to handle claims against it, has a lot of experience, has a lot of legal wherewithal. In the meantime, you have some municipalities, local jurisdictions within the state that are saying, wait a minute, it's not up to the state to decide when to issue permits or whether they can drill in a local area. And what has happened is a couple of the towns in New York State have said, we're going to ban shale gas drilling. And the industry has said, no, well, you can't do that because it's under the state's jurisdiction. And the towns have said, well, yes, we can. Industry has sued the towns. And so far in New York State, the lower court has upheld that ban.
Shale gas was partly sold as a clean alternative fuel, setting America on the path to a sustainable energy future. How has that debate played out?
My take on that is that it's a convenient myth to say, well, we're really building a bridge to something that's altogether different. I just don't see that happening. And I think globally, this is a huge thing because you have countries like India and China now that have huge energy needs. They're looking at coal, obviously, but they're looking at their, China in particular, is looking at its own natural gas. Coal is cheap, but natural gas now is very cheap as they bring these supplies online. So is this a bridge to the future? Is it cleaner burning? At least this is a discussion now that's being this on the table, where 3, 4, 5 years ago, it was conventional wisdom. It was pretty well accepted that gas burns cleaner than coal. Therefore, it is cleaner than coal.
Where do you sense that this story will end? You finish your book by saying it's going to be a long fight and that gas companies can afford to wait.
Yes, I think it will be a long fight, and I think it will be playing, frankly, over generations. But I sense right now that we're in a pivotal time, that shale gas is going to go one way, or natural gas development is going to go one way or the other with that, depending on the policy and the political will. But I think there's going to be a lot of global dynamics with this that we didn't necessarily see with nuclear power.
That's Tom Wilber speaking with our environment editor Greg Borschman about his new book, Under the Surface, Fracking Fortunes and the Fate of the Marcellus Shale, which is published by Cornell University Press.